This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Trey Smith is number one. I like watching Landon Dickerson a lot. These are guys who I watch, Landon Dickerson a lot, and I've always watched Quentin Nelson even back in middle school. Their technique and how they play and how their bodies move. So Trey Smith is a guy who is a similar size to me. So I just seeing how he moves his body, seeing how he uses his body against certain guys. But you can't watch every single offensive lineman because they do things that you just can't do physically. So understanding that, you got to know who to watch.
Welcome back. It's Molly and Hosh, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Molly out today. That was the voice of Tyler Booker, the Alabama guard, who had some things to say that were very appealing if you're looking for nasty offensive linemen. That was on CHGO. Tyler Booker now has ascended in the eyes of many Bears fans who like their linemen to come with a little bit of an edge. And that was a lot of fun to hear from him. Let's go out to our Aturo Hotline. The Score Hotline is brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. David Siverston is from Our Lads. He's our guy in Indianapolis. David, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Doing great. Long weekend, but this is the part of the process where the cream rises to the top. So I'm pedal to the metal to the end till May.
Love it, and really appreciate your insight. We're going to go through some guys whose impressions you may have of, and who may have left you with some opinions. Want to start though with Booker, because I think he's a guy that you look at and you wonder, boy, when you see an interior lineman, you think at number 10, the Bears wouldn't do that, would they? Because you've got to be Quentin Nelson-like or somebody of that ilk to go that high in the draft. And on the other hand, it's early. He could still ascend. What was your impression, and how do you rate Tyler Booker?
Well, I'm a little on the minority with Tyler Booker, and I might have to dodge some tomatoes being thrown at me here. But I had a day two grade coming into the weekend on Tyler Booker, and I left the weekend with the same exact impression. And I'll tell you what, the size and the physicality and the interview, I mean, we fall in love with interviews this time of year because he says all of the right things.
You're right.
And that Alabama coaching staff does, they do lift him up, anoint him as one of the best leaders they've ever had. And trust me, that does mean something to me. But that does not mean I'm going to put a first-round grade on him. And in today's NFL, I think one of the trends that I've seen with workouts, especially from the combine, and you have to be careful not to put too much or too little into it, but Tyler Booker's workout was very below average when you're talking about speed, movement, redirect, jumps, agility, and that is what I have as negatives on him on tape. Now, I still project him as a starter at the next level, but to me, he actually confirmed in my eyes that this is not a first-round pick. This is not a top-10 pick at all.
David, a lot of the reports come out, and they suggest that you could still find starting caliber interior offensive linemen at the top of the second round, maybe between 25 and 45. And I just wonder, with the Bears, that they picked 39 and 41, are you suggesting that might be a more likable or more maybe appropriate spot to pencil in a guy like Tyler Booker?
You're absolutely right. The gold mine, the secret is out. To find interior offensive linemen that you're very confident in that could start both early on and for a long time, it's in that top of second round area. Every single year, there's multiple guys that come out in that tier that are really high quality players. And to me, the mistake Chicago could make here is just simply reaching for a need. They're not a good enough team to try to find that one final piece. They just need to continue to stack great player after great player, hit singles and doubles in the draft. And to me, it's almost guaranteed you're going to like several players, not even just one or two, several players at both lines at the top of the second round.
One guy that's easy to like at the top of the first round, maybe at number 10 if he drops that far. Don't know if he will, but wonder what you think. Will Campbell had himself a weekend. I feel like the way he ran the 40, I don't know if it surprised some people, but it showed some people how athletic he can be. He's also a guy that has the dreaded short arms, according to a lot of measurements. What is your take on Will Campbell?
Will Campbell is similar to what we had Peter Skoronski with coming out of Northwestern a couple of years ago. He got drafted pretty high by Tennessee. He played left guard. And to me, Will Campbell is good enough to play tackle at the next level, so we can just put that out there. But I do think based on who drafts him, is that's where he'll end up. It's not just the arm length, however, though. The actual wingspan, how big this guy actually is, how broad he is really, I mean, you looked back 20 years of combine data when it comes to starting offensive tackles. He is almost off the radar small, so you have to be a little careful with just automatically labeling him the number one tackle. I'll tell you another name that I want Bears fans to do some work on in the coming months. It's Armand Membu from Missouri, 6'4", 332, no length concerns. He had the hardest pass rush schedule in terms of who he matched up against all year at Missouri this past season, and his grades in those games were his best games. That is a huge component to evaluating talent. How well do you play against the best level of competition? That's the guy that I would be zeroing in on at 10 overall.
That's great information, and that's a great homework assignment for a lot of Bears fans. How do you factor in those two guys we just mentioned with two of the other tackles that are often mentioned near the top of the first round, Josh Simmons and Kelvin Banks?
Kelvin Banks, to me, is probably a home run guard, and he might be a single or a double tackle. We've seen this with Tevin Jenkins. I think there's going to be some thoughts about Darnell Wright eventually moving in that direction if he doesn't pick it up in 2025. That's kind of the tier, that's the section I'm putting Kelvin Banks into. Josh Simmons, though, I've said this about him multiple times, the best left tackle tape I saw all year, and I've watched them all, I've watched every snap from all these guys, was Josh Simmons. It's just the fact that he didn't do it as often or as much because of the injury. And that patellar tendon injury, to me, that's a little bit more serious than the ACL, and that's going to cause a little bit of concern. He didn't measure in exceptionally well either. So to me, those guys are both probably not going to be on options at 10 overall because I simply don't think they're going to grade out high enough. But I do think that you could do worse. Those guys are starting quality offensive linemen at the next level. You just got to make sure you find the right spot and be patient with them, especially Simmons.
We're talking with David Sifferson from Our Lads here on Mullay and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Did any prospect in Indianapolis all week long have a better experience or help himself more than Shamar Stewart might have?
Oh, no. No, I mean, he is he's probably number one, and the number two would be the safety from South Carolina, Nick Emanuori. But Shamar Stewart, not only did he have impressive times and jumps, and he looked great in drills, he's in rare territory. He's in Myles Garrett territory with testing. And those are numbers that I didn't think I would ever see again in scouting and evaluation. Shamar Stewart, he drops 10 to 15 pounds from the season, runs a 4.59, 40-inch vertical, 10.11 broad jump. For those that don't know, those are numbers are almost never seen at this kind of weight. And I'll tell you what, guys, this is the kind of workout that put Jarvon Walker on the number one overall pick radar in 2022 to the Jacksonville Jaguars over Aiden Hutchinson. Now, probably not the best idea from Jacksonville, but these workouts do mean something now that the coaches and GMs are really trying to catch up to who these guys are. But he's going to be a fascinating study, and that his tools, they're going to make you drool. But his production was very lackluster in college, and we're going to see how much that actually matters draft weekend.
That's why I can't stop shaking my head as you talk, because I saw the same thing last week, and I was marveling at his speed and his combination and the 99th percentile and all these things. And then you look at the 4.5 sacks in 3 seasons. How does that happen, David?
Texas A&M, they have not had the best reputation for developing 5-star talent. And this kid was a 5-star. He was like a 5-star of 5 stars coming out of high school. I mean, this kid was gifted. I remember watching him as a freshman, and I'll write down guys just for future reference when someone pops off the screen that's not draft eligible. And he looked like an NFL defender as an 18-year-old freshman, but they just didn't develop some of the rush moves, and maybe there's some consistency. This is where all the background checking, the interviewing of him and his coaching staff and his background, that's where you really have to kind of see – who is he? You never know who you have until he's in your building. And you can be talented all you want, but everyone in the NFL is talented. How much do you work at your craft? That's going to be probably the biggest question NFL teams need to figure out. Was it more him, or was it more the lackluster coaching staff at A&M?
Michigan's Mason Graham, known to be a hardworking guy, a guy who has worked for everything that he has accomplished. And I just wonder what kind of week he had and how far down you see him dropping.
Yeah, I can't see him escaping. I would say the top 12. I mean, I'm looking at Chicago and San Francisco being his absolute basement, and this would be a home run for Chicago. And I'll tell you what, this is the time of year where a guy like Mason Graham does start to fall a little bit, because we start to fall in love with the Shamar Stewart, top 1 percentile, the 40s. And, you know, this is a very pedestrian-looking guy, 6'3", 296, 32-inch arms, 78-inch wingspan. You know, he doesn't look like other guys. And he looks like he's someone that would be going day three or even undrafted when you look at the profile, but you have to watch the tape. The tape rules all in evaluation. I think everything else is just about 20% of the process. But you know, it happens every year. You know, coaches and GMs, they fall in love with upside and potential, almost sometimes too much. And Mason Graham, to me, is probably the surest double you're going to hit in a draft. I don't know if he'll hit Aaron Donald's home run caliber level, but he's not going to crash and burn. He's going to help a team win. Chicago would be blessed to get him in on that defensive line.
I just wonder, with all of the speculation and controversy surrounding Abdul Carter and the medicals that Adam Schefter reported, and the possibility of him needing surgery, then Drew Rosenhaus saying he's going to avoid surgery, just wait for the pro day. How do you factor that into your own evaluation, and how do you see that situation unfolding?
Man, I mean, it really, I hate to say it, but it's going to be a flip of the coin. And what bothers me, it's not the shoulder, it's the foot. That because this guy, his game, 90% of his game is about get off and bend. And especially when he has that bone issue on the outside of his foot, those guys really need to plant that outside of the foot when they turn the corner at the top of the rush. And that's a huge part of his game. I would think that's probably over 50% of what makes him such a dangerous player. And it does cause some concern, but this is what the NFL draft is, guys. There's no such thing as a sure thing. Anyone that tells you different doesn't know what they're talking about. And at some point, you're going to have to kind of take some risk management into your decision-making and say, hey, we're going to swing for the fence here, or we're going to pass on him, just like everybody passed on Micah Parsons, and now you're kicking yourself year after year. So it's a tough decision. I think part of it is going to be get to know Abdul Carter as a person. If he is really determined to get back healthy ASAP, but also do it the right way, you're going to be confident you're getting a premier pass rusher. And those guys are really hard to find in the NFL, and they can change your team. So if you fall in love with the person through all this background checking, I say no question, you go for it. It won't impact my grade at all.
For different reasons, a cloud hangs over Mike Green, the Marshall edge rusher, because he was very open and transparent about addressing the sexual assault allegations that he faced at Virginia, which landed him at Marshall. He's somebody who has amazing ability and upside, David, but I just wonder how that might affect the way teams view him and how important then his interviews become.
Yeah, I mean, his interviews are probably, I mean, they were the most important part of the weekend because he didn't work out. I mean, he did the bench press, but actually had a really impressive bench press number. But yeah, the off-the-field stuff, especially when it comes to sexual assault, and there are some teams that it's a moral issue if you really want to bring something like that into your club. But also, it could be a moral issue in giving a kid a second chance and knowing that everyone does make mistakes. But some teams do weigh this more than others, and that's what makes predicting the NFL draft impossible, because it comes down to 32 different opinions, and you know, you get five opinions in the same room, they're not going to be the same. And Mike Green, to me, it's not about making a mistake that crosses you off. It's how do you respond to making the mistake? You know, do you own it? Do you take ownership of these mistakes and do you move forward, or do you constantly deflect and not man up to making a mistake? So that's going to be answered in those private interviews.
Talking with David Sifferson from Our Lads about the NFL Combine in Indianapolis last week. Let's look at running backs. Ashton Jeanty met with the Bears. He's a guy that has been speculated could be top of the first round possibility. I also love the fact that you looked like were impressed by Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State, somebody who made an impression. How deep is this running back class, and who do you think is at the top of it?
deepest running back class I've ever had. And I've been doing this with our lads for 13 years now. And I've never seen a group quite like this. And I'll tell you what, it's at the top of the draft, these first round pick. I have three or maybe even four first round grades, but also rounds three, four, five, you're getting guys that have legitimate starter grades. And no, I love how that 2024 NFL season started to bring back the running back. And I really do think that got a little overplayed by media and fans, that running backs can always be found and they're not that important. They're vital to a winning football team. And yes, they can be found in any part of the draft, but so can, you know, Tom Brady was found in the sixth round. You know, so let's not overlook the importance of how good these players are. And the Ashton Jeanty going to the Bears in the first round, I think, is on the table, but I don't think it would be the smartest decision, because I'll tell you what, he is not the automatic number one guy across the league. Omarion Hampton from North Carolina, he's right there with him. He was one of the winners of the weekend. I mean, this dude is 4.46 40 at 221 pounds with a 10-10 broad jump. This is Saquon Barkley type territory. And Quinshon Judkins, he had an 11-foot broad jump that ranked number one among all backs, third among all backs and receivers at 221 pounds, and his tape backs it up. This dude was approaching Herschel Walker territory in the SEC as a true freshman at Mississippi. I mean, you can go down the list of guys and say, hey, we're going to add to this backfield. It's really, you got to answer the question, what kind of back do you want? Do you want a pass catcher, a speed guy, a between-the-tackles bruiser? You will be able to find one of these guys for the first five rounds, no question.
Coming to talk about running backs, got to ask you about Cam Scadaboo. He also met with the Bears. Is a guy that helped himself with a vertical that I don't think people expected, 39 inches. He's a good athlete. Where do you think he falls, and how good of a week did he have?
Yeah, I mean, day two for me, Cam Scadaboo, he didn't do most of the workouts. He didn't get any of the on-field drills, but I'll tell you what, I'll look forward to his pro day, but he's a day two back all day to me. I actually wrote him up right after I wrote up Ashton Jeanty, and I said this in my report. I was like, his running style is exceptionally close to Jeanty when it comes to contact balance, running low to the ground, and I don't think there's a back in this class that loves and craves contact more than him. And I don't know if I want him carrying the ball 25 times a game because of how violent he plays, but this is the kind of guy that you put in the backfield in the second half of a game when you have a lead and you're just going to wear down the defense. I mean, he's an annoying guy to play against because he's going to inflict pain on you as you try to tackle him. That's the kind of guy I like to get day two and combine with DeAndre Swift.
Somewhere Bears fans are smiling because they love the idea of that guy in a Bears uniform. That would be fun.
Absolutely.
So
that would be fun.
Did Travis Hunter do anything to make teams more definitive about what position he will play? And do you think that he has one direction he should take, or should he leave both options open?
I mean, both options open, and I think the one thing he did do is that he was labeled a cornerback at the start of the combine, and he actually made it a job for himself to say, no, I am not a corner, I am playing both. That he is pretty adamant about it. It's not just something to kind of make him look like Shohei Ohtani, the football version. He genuinely thinks he should be playing on both sides of the ball. And I'll tell you what, in today's NFL, I actually like him at wide receiver more than I do corner. I think he could be special at both, but obviously I don't think he could be full-time on both sides of the ball. But Travis Hunter, to me, is kind of a better version of Garrett Wilson in terms of body type, speed, ball tracking, and what he can do after the catch. I would sign for that right now and let him be a rotational cornerback, because that's a little bit easier, in my opinion, to control snaps if you can be a nickel dime package defender, which is a base defense of today's NFL. So I think Travis Hunter is surprising how many people, how adamant he is that he is not a one side player. You're going to put him on both sides of the ball. And that actually gives me some hesitation with some teams. Are they even capable of doing that? You need to have really good brain power, really good leadership to come up with the right role for him. And I think only a few teams in the NFL have proven they are capable of doing something like that.
I personally am not overly impressed with Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders as far as being top five kind of guys, maybe top overall kind of guys. But that's a debate maybe for another day. I'm just curious, was there a third quarterback that might have helped himself to get closer to the first round, like so many do, it seems, every single year?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, Jackson Dart, to me, he just had the most consistent, steadiest ball placement on the most difficult throws on the throwing drills. And that, to me, I mean, he still remains my QB3, and he's right there with Shedeur Sanders, to be honest with you. I think Cam Ward's a little above both those guys. But Dart, to me, I love his build. I love his ability to throw the ball deep. I love the competitive nature. But there really weren't many quarterbacks. The one that kind of stood out to me in terms of, wow, this looks better than what I saw on tape, was Riley Leonard from Notre Dame. And this is a guy that played through the national championship, goes right to the Senior Bowl when everyone else is backing out of it, and then he goes to the combine. He actually had a really good week. The kid is such a competitive guy, and I don't think we're seeing a starter in him at some point, but you do want quality backups at the next level for both intellectually and physically, and I think that's what Riley Leonard brings to the table.
Before I let you go, what do you think is more likely to happen? Three quarterbacks go in the top 10 or one quarterback go in the top 10?
Wow, that's a great question. We got to make a betting marker for that, man. That is a tough question. I don't see three going. So I'm going to go with. I'd be more surprised to see three go that high, because right now my number is two. But the more I see and the more I read and the more people I talk to, this is such a defensive heavy draft, and the quarterback draft in next year's crop does look like it's going to be significantly better than what we have right now. I do think the Sam Darnold, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, those shoes need to drop, and that's going to really help us figure out what that top 10 will look like. But to me, Cam Ward is a lock for the top 10, and personally, I have a second-round grade on Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart, and I think some of the league, even though quarterback demand is so high in the NFL in general, there's just a lot of reasons why I think that the teams will look elsewhere or try to find a day two guy or punt on quarterback till next year.
David Siverson.
My answer is going to be one.
From Owlets, thank you so much for joining us. Great stuff this morning.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
That's David Siverson from Our Lads.